All right. I'd like to welcome everybody to our November 19th, 2015 regular meeting of the Marysville Board of Education. May we have a roll call?
Mr. Loop?
Here.
Mr. Pleasant? Absent. Ms. Powers?
Here.
Mr. Smith?
Here.
Ms. Devine?
Here. Thank you. And next, we are going to have some Navin students lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance, so we can all rise.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you so much. Mrs. Lewis, I'd like to thank you for hosting this meeting tonight. And also, I didn't say anything at the beginning. I don't know if anybody is interested in participating in our public participation section, but the book is over by the
main table.
Okay, over at the main table there. If anybody's interested, please sign in. Okay. We will start with a motion to approve the agenda.
So moved.
Motion by Mrs. Powers.
Second.
Second by Mr. Smith. Roll call.
Ms. Powers?
Yes.
Mr. Smith?
Yes.
Mr. Luke?
Yes.
Ms. Devine?
Yes. Motion carries. Next up, we have a presentation from Navin Elementary.
I would like to thank everybody for being here tonight, especially my four guests in the front who have come to share some information with you. As I start, I'd like to let everyone know that we are presenting a couple different things tonight. First of all, we have 9 new staff members, new teachers here at Navin this year. So that has presented quite a challenge, but also it has really given us an opportunity to help these teachers grow and to learn new instructional methods that are really in the best interest of our kids. And I wish I could tell you I was doing all this by myself, but I am not. I'd like to give full credit to our coaches. These are 2 math coaches that are here. This is Heather McLaughlin and Jennifer Dellahostria, and they are our math coaches. We're fortunate to have a little extra math help this year. And Shelly Mullaney, who is our ELA coach, that's English Language Arts, she is not here tonight because we're really presenting some math information. So without further ado, I'm going to turn it over to my coaches, who I will tell you have done a phenomenal job going into classrooms, modeling instructional strategies, really supporting our new staff and our veteran staff. So I can't tell you how much I owe these two and Shelley for doing a phenomenal job in getting our teachers ready to really grow our kids in the best way. So that being said, here they are.
Well, thank you. What an introduction. I think that we're both so, so excited about these new roles just because we're so extremely passionate about math and the shift that is happening in math classrooms currently. And so we're really excited about the student engagement piece, which is kind of what we've been charged with, is increasing student engagement across the board in our schools. And one of the things that we're doing in order to do that is kind of taking the shift between the traditional way that we learned, the way that we all learned math. Here's the process, get the right answer, you're good to go, to more of an inquiry-based design. You know, that thinking where we're really having to look at, not just did you get the correct answer, but the process, how did you get there? So we've been really excited about trying different things in the classrooms, getting kids talking to one another about math, doing some number talks, and one of the things that has been really successful in getting kids to really focus on that problem-solving procedural process has been rich tasks. So a rich task is an open-ended problem situation that you present to the kids, and the role of the teacher is simply just to frame up the task without telling them how to start or what to do. Okay, you're not telling them, okay, today we're going to add, and then we're going to do this next. You just say, here it is,
go.
And you have to teach them, you know, the how to work in teams and groups and how to collaborate. It's a little tricky at the beginning, but you know, the role of the students is to do the learning. They talk it out, they figure it out, they try strategies, they pick their resources, they pick their materials. Do I want to use paper pencil? Do I want to use blocks? Do I want to make a chart? Do I want to draw this out? And they just work. And the teacher kind of floats around and says, you know, what are you doing? How's that going? Well, talk to me about that. Why did you do that? Well, can we try it a different way? Or, you know, and they just kind of problem solve and work it out. And then at the end, there's a component where they get together and they share, and that's where the magic happens. You know, it, in the video, the kids will be explaining, and you'll hear half the class go, oh, like, oh, man, now I get it, you know, and it's like that's when the wheels click and the kids start to really get it. So, and it's hard. It's hard as a teacher to give up the control and just say, all right, Ava, go for it. You're like, oh, gosh, can they do this? But they can, and they love it, and they're good at it. And it's an opportunity for them to take what they've learned in the classroom and apply it. It's really cool as a teacher just to step back and watch it happen, but it's hard to do. And so, you know, it's a risk. It's a risk for some of our veteran teachers who have taught math one way for so long and they're afraid to try something different. But some of our new teachers are like, heck, I'll do it. I don't know any different, you know. And so it's everyone's just kind of all in and wrapping their arms around it, and it's going pretty well. So I'm going to show you a video. Erin Morrison is a third grade teacher in our building.
Where is Erin Morrison?
I had gone into her room and videotaped her teaching this lesson because I used it for professional development for our new teachers. But Lynette liked it so much, she said, let's tweak this a little bit and do it for the board. So I tried to take some of Erin out of the video and put more of the kids in so you can see the kids in action. But this is a 9-minute video that was a 45-minute lesson. So this is really compacted. But I just wanted to give you a picture of what it looks like in the classroom. So. Maybe.
Now, we've never done a rich math test in our own classroom together yet. We've done it in our different classrooms, correct?
Yes.
Can somebody tell me, raise your hand if you can tell me what rich math means. What does that mean when we do a rich math test? Is it rich, like lots of money?
Yes.
So you what's rich math mean?
It's harder math.
Anyone else want to add something? It's definitely challenging. You're right. Carter?
It's hard. It has many steps.
Okay. Hard. Lots of steps.
And also, also I have to work with your team or else you're not going to get it.
I'm so glad you said that. Team is a really important word when we do rich math. Okay, when we work on a rich math problem, Kobe, we are going to be working together as a team, okay? It's going to take all of you to come together and to really help each other because the problem is going to be challenging. One person is probably not going to be able to solve it completely on their own. You guys are going to have to really work together. Okay. Are you guys ready for the challenging problem?
Yes.
All right. Here we go. This is kind of fun. Okay. This problem, I'm going to see if I can make it a little bit bigger here.
Oh, let's do it.
Okay. All right. This problem that we're going to do today is called the number shack. Now, I want everyone to watch carefully. You have to be listening really carefully and thinking about it because it is a challenge.
That's what I said.
It says a number shack is generated from its two middle numbers. And generated just means that it's made from its two middle numbers right here. Can you figure out the rule for working out the root and the norm?
I didn't say that.
Put and then we got and we did 28 minus 8 equals 20, and then we did 28 plus 8 equals 36, and then we leave these two numbers in the middle, and 36 minus 20 equals 16, and then we did 36 plus 20 equals 56.
Do you see how it's kind of hard to see, but see how they circled it and they put a number 4 on the top? Why do you think they put a 4? Why do you think that this team put a 4 here at the top of the stack? Casey, what do you think?
I think they did it because that's the fourth house that they're in.
Yeah, they tried to organize their numbers by putting, they had a lot of work here, right? And to help organize it, they circled it and put, this is the fourth house in the stack. They circled this one when they put the top of this one. 5. You think that was for the fifth house in the fifth shack?
Yeah.
Yeah. Very good. All right. Awesome, guys. Thanks for coming.
Thank you, Ms. Morgan. So we like to know if you have any questions about a Rich Math Pass. We're not going to answer. We're going to see if they can answer. They're a little nervous. And by the way, our friend on the... Why don't you introduce yourself?
Yes, thank you.
My name is Lily.
Oh, speak louder. Louder.
My name is Lily.
Lily what?
Hammond.
And what is today?
November
19th. Well, what else is it today? Your...
birthday.
I'm Aiden Dillman.
I'm Justin Severin.
So do you guys have any questions for our students who actually live the experience and do it quite often?
Okay. I do. Do you like Rich Math?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Tell them why.
The fun part of it is because it's challenging.
Okay.
And it helps you with synergizing
okay.
and teamwork when you work with your team.
Awesome. Great. Had you done any Rich Math before this year?
Like in second grade or first grade?
I don't think so.
No? Okay.
Is it easy, guys?
No.
So it's hard, right?
Yeah. Yes.
And so you like it even though it's hard?
Yeah.
Why? Tell us about that.
I like that it's hard because it challenges you and you don't get the answer quick. You have to do the problem for a few minutes.
So you got you girls. You aren't going to let the boys over, do you, are you?
Yeah, you are.
Okay, I have a question. I have a question for the girls. Girls, can you do it by yourself without the boys?
Probably not.
So it's all teamwork. So it's not good to do it on your own, but rather as a team then, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
But isn't it sometimes when you work in a group, there's like two or three people that are really like got a good thing going, and sometimes there's that one person that kind of wants to do their own thing, and what do you do when that happens?
We just kind of tell them to come over and tell them and give them a job to do in the Rich Math Task.
Say, yep. I really need you to help me with this.
Yeah.
Can you help me figure this out?
Yeah.
Does it help you to... I mean, I guess you've learned a lot of math things in kindergarten and first grade and second grade. So do you think that it helps you learn more? Explain how it's different from the way you've learned before.
I think it's different because you don't do the math problem. It's not like a normal math problem, and it's a lot harder than what you would normally do. Mm-hmm.
And she doesn't tell you what to do to divide times or plus or minus.
Mm-hmm. You just got to figure it out on your own.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And
let me ask this. Do you ever get any hints from your teacher?
No.
She's tough, huh?
So I'm curious if your parents are able to help you with your homework.
Sometimes.
Or is it too hard for them to?
Most of the time it is.
Right, your parents didn't do this stuff 20 years ago, did they? I didn't do this stuff 20 years ago. This is a new way of learning math and a new way of thinking, but mm-hmm. we're liking it, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you find on this homework that you find yourself teaching your parents?
Yeah.
Yes, a little bit.
Probably their principal, too.
Yeah.
And are your parents good? Are they good learners?
Yeah.
Got three yeses.
Yeah. So you can see from Rich Math, I mean, it's not what a traditional math classroom looks like. It's noisy. It's loud. There's kids on the floor. There is a lot going on. Like, if you walked in that room, you'd think, if you take the time to listen to the kids, they're engaged, they're working hard, they are knee-deep in some good learning, but it doesn't look and sound like what our classrooms looked and sound like 20 years ago. So it's a shift.
How much of the instructional time is spent on the rich math and how much is spent in more of a traditional setting?
Erin, you might talk about how your classroom is set up for math. How do you do a typical math lesson?
Uh-huh. We do typically Monday through Thursday. We'll do like the traditional math lessons. And then we use the rich math lessons every Friday. But even though we're using the rich math on Fridays, we're also trying to incorporate some of that more inquiry-based instruction in our daily math lessons Monday through Thursday. So, you know, there has to be some direct instruction, and it can't all be open-ended all the time. But we're really trying to use this inquiry every Friday and then also pulling it into our daily lessons as well. So
I think it's been most important to have balance. I think mm-hmm. that's been one thing we've just talked about with all of our teachers. All of it has its place. Right. So it's certainly important to you still need to have that direct instruction at time. You sit. Mm-hmm. Sometimes you just hands off and you can spend that whole class time letting them discover and sharing strategies and listening to different ideas. So everything has its place. I think what the shift has been, and Erin does this a lot, is, you know, more centers-based, more stations-based, more, you know, allowing kids time to work together, and so maybe they're working on something like this together with some support, and then students over here may be doing something a little different that's a little less challenging that they can do a little more independently, so it's just kind of shifting that just from sitting the whole entire class period and watching the direct instruction to, you know, maybe just starting this first and then kind of pulling it all together afterwards. But it certainly still has its place.
Doing a number talk where the kids are giving answers and thinking things through, and then Erin has done a couple centers and then small group instruction too. So mm-hmm. it just depends. We're trying to exactly find the balance. So, mm-hmm.
so when we use the word traditional, because I just like to clarify because I'm sitting over here twitching a little bit. Uh-huh. certainly when you refer to traditional, it wouldn't even be the way we went to school, correct? So talk to me when you talk about a traditional lesson you have, which I'm going to make the argument is not traditional the way all of us are thinking of that. Talk to me about math in general and how math has changed and math instruction has changed. So we don't really teach the traditional 2 + 2 = 4, even though it still is 4, correct? Am I guiding that question enough? Okay. Anyone can take it.
Okay. She's like, no, like, no.
I'm sorry.
No, I think that's a really valid point, too. I, you know, direct instruction, sitting, we're just a typical what people picture from back in, you know, when everybody went to school is, here's how you do the math. Here's the procedure. You immediately get a procedure. You plug in the numbers. You get an answer. The answer is correct. We're good to go.
Let's face it. Let's say the bad word, worksheet.
20 of those problems. 30. You just do them over again. And it's a procedure. It's something that, you know, can be very successful. It's something that you can be very good at. But you don't necessarily really understand the why behind it, the how you're arriving at your answer. You're just getting the answer, which is great. I was that student, and I loved all of those A's. But, you know, I think what is so exciting about where the shift is happening is the
the process, the how are we getting to that answer? And that's the discussion that we're now having. So, you know, the kids are excited that they get 12 and 12 is the correct answer, but now that's not what we're focusing on. We're coming back to, but how did you get 12? And how did you get 12? And you may have gotten 12 differently than this person did. And it now has shifted over to the application part. So not just the, I can plug in a number and get an answer, but I'm able to understand why I got the answer and now use that strategy later on when there's more problem solving. So these types of lessons kind of lends itself to really that design thinking, the, you know, everyday real world career, college-based things that we want to prepare kids for that the, you know, I won't say it, but, you know, the typical way that everybody thinks of math is, you know, but I got the right answer, and this is, why can't I just get my calculator out and plug it in? This is why. We want them to have those conversations. We want them to really think about, you know, why it works, and then they're going to remember it. Because I know as soon as that lesson was over and you got that correct answer, you moved on, it's not necessarily there. They, you know, you not necessarily engaged in really understanding what you were doing. Whereas now, they got to figure it out on their own. Felt really cool, especially after working a really long time and maybe not getting it and not getting hints, right? And then all of a sudden you get it and it's that moment of, oh my gosh, and now you remember that. And that's something that you can take with you. And I think that is what is so powerful.
And during many of those tasks, I know in Erin's class, she'll have like a first class task, a second, and a third. So if kids get something easily, they move on to something harder and harder. So everybody doesn't even have to be solving the exact same thing at the exact same time many times. And that allows everybody to kind of find their own growth.
And most of the tasks are set up that way as well. So it provides lots of opportunities for students at all levels to participate in some way. So there's a lot of opportunity for it to have stretch and a lot of opportunity for students that may be struggling to really be able to kind of see things in a different way. What's been really interesting in this position, and I think that you have seen it too, is students that get things very quickly have more difficulty sometimes doing the why is this? And so that's interesting because I think that students that struggle in math really excel in this because then it clicks why it's working. But it's certainly a challenge, and you know, sometimes we have to reteach ourselves.
Is really important.
I would just add to the problem solving piece is so important. At the beginning of the year, it is really tough for the kids. You know, you're giving it to them and you're having them problem solve it on their own, and so there's a lot of roadblocks. And they're not quite sure what to do or how to solve a problem on their own. I mean, I had a student the first time I did it said, "No, Mrs. Morrison, I need you to tell me what to do." You know, and he really had no clue where to start. But the more that we do this, by the end of the year, I mean, the third graders, you can give them a very open-ended task, and they know exactly how to tackle the problem, what materials to grab. So I think the problem-solving piece is really important, teaching them, you know, how to tackle problems on their own without me giving them step-by-step.
And having it be okay if it doesn't work
out.
Yeah. Learning from those mistakes as well. Mm-hmm.
That's great.
Well, thank
That's
you, guys. Great. I appreciate you coming tonight and sharing your experiences.
Thank you so much.
We just want to take a minute to kind of share with you and compare some data about where we would be if we were with our red-blue group from last year versus all day, every day. So Kelly Doty, our kindergarten class, and Hillary Weiser, our other kindergarten teachers back there, we're just saying hi to you. Kelly just put a couple things together because, I mean, it's still early in the year, so we don't have a ton of data, but we do have some significant data. So to me, it was really powerful to see.
Yeah,
so.
if I can.
Yeah.
I just want to thank, guys, you did a wonderful job greeting
yes.
us
thank you.
Tonight
thank
when we
you.
Came. We yeah. really appreciate that. You made us feel very welcome to your school. Thank you.
Thank you.
Prior to this year, I taught Red Blue Kindergarten here for 3 years. And every year, you work really, really hard to get your kids as far as you can. You want to set a really good foundation for when they go to first grade. That being said, this year, having all day, every day kindergarten, just in November, the data that I get to show you tonight that really highlights what we had with Red Blue and how hard we would push our kids, and now having them here all day, every day, just by November, the growth that these kids have made so far is amazing. So one of the first things I want to show you is what we do at the beginning of the year. The foundation of kindergarten is teaching letters and letter sounds.
And to learn how to read, they have to know letters. They know have to know how to sound out words, to put things together. It's just a foundational skill. So when they come into kindergarten, we give them a letter assessment. There are 54 letter names that we want our students to know at the end of the year. Now, I set my baseline at 50 right now because I want to push my kids. I want them to know as many of these letters and letter sounds as they can. So that being said, Heather McLaughlin helped me with these graphs. And so in August, for a red-blue kindergarten student, and we use my old data from last year, 86% of students did not have at least 50 out of 54 letters. You expect that when they come into kindergarten. But as you see the graphs grow, in November, when we give the same assessment, from instead of 14% not knowing the letters, we had 52% of my students were able to identify 50 out of 54 letters. Then in February, we had 76% of those same students had 50 out of 54 letters. That's the red-blue kindergarten. Now, for all day, every day, we don't have February data, but we've got August. You'll notice it's very similar. 86% of students didn't have those letters, 77%. They're still coming in at the same point. Nothing has changed there. But in November of this year, right now, we just gave assessment last week. So 91% of my kids, and that's across all of our kindergarten classes, 91% of our kids can identify 50 out of 54 letters. February of last year, only 76%. We are 3 months ahead of where we were last year at this point. Because also teaching letter sounds. Letter ID is a lot easier than letter sounds. When they come in, knowing the letters is one thing, but knowing the letter sounds is another thing. So there's 33 sounds that we expect them to know at the end of kindergarten. I set my baseline at 30 right now. So in August, a red-blue kindergarten, it's a harder skill. So you only have about 95% of students do not know these letters. In November, we've moved to 33% do know at least 30 out of 33. Then in February, you get to 62%. So they're getting these letters, they're getting these letter sounds. They're not there yet. They're not where I really, really wanted them to be. Then for all day, every day, 100%. My kids didn't know at least 30 out of 33 this year. But now I have 70% of my class already has 30 out of 33 sounds. So we're already jumping so far ahead of where we were last year.
That's awesome.
Now, the last thing, and this one is really my most, this is what really makes me excited, because we give a test called Hearing, Recording, Sounds, and Words. And what that is, it's a sentence dictation, a story dictation. You tell the kids a story, and the story is, I have a big dog at home. Today I'm going to take him to school. Remember that, guys? And you say that one word at a time. All right, I have. All right, say it slowly. Think about what sounds you hear. You don't help them, but you say, write down what you hear. I have A. Do you know how to write the word A? And so they write it down one word at a time, and they only write down the sounds that they know. Now, in August, there's 37 sounds in that we expect kindergartners to know or students to be able to identify. Out of those 33 or 37 sounds, expectation is 22 in February, so only 22. 95%, they don't get it at the beginning of the year. They don't know letters, they don't know sounds, they can't put these things together yet. But in February of last year for Red Blue, I can't read that. I think it's 55%. They were able to identify 22 out of the 37 sounds. This year, all right, this is the most exciting thing I've done. So in August, 91%. They're at the same point when they come in. But now, I just gave this assessment yesterday to bring to you. 70% of my students already can identify 22 out of the 37 sounds. Wow. So we are way ahead. And to give you an example of what that looks like, this is a February example of what that sentence would look like last year. So you see I, you see a lot of initial sounds. Have, a little ending, a big dog, just an initial sound for dog. And so you see how that's in, they still have finger spaces, they still have initial sounds. But then you compare, this is like the middle of my group right here. This is what I've got this year. This is what we've all got this year. I have, oh no, no. Okay, so I mean, you don't need me to read
say to you can see this. I have a big dog at home. Today, I am going to take him to school. Well, we're home from the house. But this is amazing. These are the things that we're seeing because we're here consistently, and we have the structure of all the everyday kindergarten. And I just want to thank you for that.
Thank you.
That's
really exciting.
And we tell the first grade teachers, because I mean, these kids, it's going to be a whole new thing for them next year, because these kids are just going to come in with a whole different skill set than what they've had before.
Right.
Yeah, it's great.
That's wonderful. Thanks so much for sharing that.
I know I shared with the board that I had met with a teacher who had cried and talked to me with such passion about the need. And that really drove me to do my research, and that would be Kelly. So certainly I think those kids are achieving at that level has a lot to do with the teacher and not just the time, but I think it's a compliment of both. So just kudos for you for your passion for kindergarten. I couldn't do that job, but that's why they made people like you, and you do a fantastic job.
Thank you.
Okay.
Does someone need us to log off so you can
log in? It's on there. It's good. Thank you.
I just have one other thing, Ms. Lewis, before you take off.
Oh.
One of my major frustrations when I was a principal was at the end of the school day, I would watch kids leave the building with such energy, and my teachers were so tired. And I kept thinking to myself, really, school should be the opposite direction, right? Who's doing the cognitive work when we're at school? And switching that, and certainly what you've shared here tonight and described about what's happening in the classrooms is that, you know, change to teacher as coach and facilitator of learning and letting kids try and take risks and good stuff.
Really, good stuff. And they have gone into, my new teachers are trying it already. I had a teacher for her evaluation, Brandon, try a rich math task, and it was first grade, phenomenal. So I give credit again to them for supporting and helping them grow as well. So.
You know, I was just telling Sue, even as adults, you know, you go into a training class, I know me, I'm like, hurry up, I need to get hands-on. I can do this if I can just do it, you know, but to sit and listen to it, I mean, it's the same in the adult world, I believe, so that's awesome.
Well, I know as a parent, my daughter is Lily, and she comes home all the time and she teaches me, and I'm like, oh my gosh, that's so cool.
Yeah.
So it's actually, as a parent too, you're like, this is really neat. Are you guys learning this? And she's like, yeah. And I can show you how to do it a different way, too, if you want me to. I'm like, okay, because I only know one way. That's why she asked, you know.
Future teacher there, right?
Yeah.
And I wanted to say that, too, as a former student, where was this when I was in school? I told Aiden I had to sit in from recess in fourth grade because I couldn't get my multiplication tables. And if I'm a teamwork, you know, task hands-on person, if they would have had this, I probably would have done a lot better in math.
And I just wanted to question, I know with our coaches and stuff, you're in different buildings, and just wanted to make sure that all of our buildings are on the same page, and you know that all of our kids are getting these same opportunities, because it's wonderful.
I
think so too. I know, like when we go on our building visits, I see a lot of these things going on, and I think that's another important thing to bring up about our coaches, the fact that they do travel, and there's a lot of collaboration going on between the buildings, and we really appreciate that.
The coaches are phenomenal, I think our teachers depend on them greatly, and they have been, especially with all the new ones, I mean, they have been such a support and have done an amazing job, invaluable.
Great.
Thank you very much. Next up, we have a presentation regarding transportation.
Well,
hello.
Hi, good evening. My name is Tina Schroff, and I'm the transportation supervisor this year. It's been a very exciting job so far.
4 months now?
4 months?
Yeah.
4 months, wow.
Thank you. I should have thought
that.
I know.
Let me get that real quick.
I think she left.
No, she did.
She leave? Jennifer, could you bring Lily back? Could you bring Lily back in?
I can't see that.
Brian, do you want to lead us? You need to sing Happy Birthday to Lily.
Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, dear Lily. Happy birthday to you.
Bye. There. It's a perfect pillow. Hey, I know, yeah.
That's right.
Well, actually, I'm here tonight to actually give a recommendation to change our busing boundaries. For after the boundary change last year, we'd like to recommend going K through 6 to 1 mile. Walk boundary, and for 7 through 12, a mile and a half. Right now, we're actually meeting state guidelines involves. We're feasible responsible right now, but with the current, or what we're doing currently, if we change this, we would not add any more buses right now. Like I said, if you want 1 mile for K through 6, 7 through 12, a mile and a half. I'd like to start this on January 5th when we come back. This will right now impact approximately 210 students that will actually get to ride the school bus to school. Why do I want to do this? Why do we want to do this? Safety concerns for kids walking. Yet at the same time, still be fiscally responsible. And we're always looking. We're always looking at practices of what we do and expanding different things to all of our community. Okay, right. Like I said, right now we would not add any current buses to our fleet. I'd just be adding stops to our current routes.
Okay. Tina is not going to toot her horn, but I'm going to toot it for her. But also part of that why is that Tina was given the challenge to really look at our routes this year. And she's very skilled at routing and what she does. It's quite impressive to where she was able to figure some things out, be able to make some recommendations. So just wanted to share that as well. It's a specific skill set. Mm-hmm. Also then, too, with the costs involved, bottom dollar, what is it getting to? Well, due to this intense look at it, there are no additional personnel costs. There will be no additional buses need to be purchased to the MSVD, the MAVSD fleet. Again, no new buses needing purchase as well. There is a minimal cost involved, wear and tear, fuel, mileage, etc. Running some rough numbers, again, rough numbers, especially with fuel and mileage, approximately $3,800 for the rest of this year is going to be the cost to implement this change to a 1.5 for our 712, a 1.0 for our K6. The big question out there, too, how are you going to communicate? How are you going to make sure the specific families affected are going to know that this change is occurring? In December, we've collaborated to where each individual family that is going to be affected by this possible change will receive a personalized letter addressed to them in the mail. Also, parents, students will be able to access via their PowerSchool access, their bus times or pickup times, locations, etc., just like we do at the beginning of the school year. And then also on our district website, there'll be a hot button, transportation boundaries, January 2016, with detailed information outlining updates, information and referring them to certain locations as well. So communication will definitely be clear as well.
Be pretty exciting to transport these kids.
Yeah.
So I do have a question. So now what made the difference of the K-6 and the 7-12, the mile to the mile and a half? What determined that the older ones that we'd go a mile and a half out and the younger ones a mile?
Actually, the biggest thing is the little ones. We really want to focus on these little ones walking to school, but not being able to change, putting more staff on or more buses on the road right now was the biggest factor to not have to change it for 1 mile for everybody.
Okay. And you got to prioritize, too. We only have certain capacities without adding buses to the fleet, without adding personnel costs.
Okay.
So you have to prioritize, and that higher priority was going to be given to our K-6 kids, the younger age students for that mile, versus and still able to reduce to a 1.5 for our 7 through 12 students as well.
Okay.
So it's a win-win for everybody.
Okay.
Let me make sure I'm clear on this. If we were to try to move both the elementary and high school kids to 1 mile, we would need additional buses.
Correct.
And we'd need additional staff. Is that correct?
Correct.
Yes.
Do you have some sense of the number of high school kids that are in that 1 mile to mile and a half range? Or not.
No, I really didn't get that number. I just know right now, with the kids that are affected right now, it's approximately 210 kids overall.
We knew for sure it pushed us over our capacity.
Right.
Okay.
We can push it there right now. Fill these buses up.
Right. I was telling Sue, I looked at that wrong. I was thinking you were going a mile and a half out to get the high schoolers, but not only a mile. I see where it turned around. The kids will only have to walk a mile that are 4 through 6.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
And then right now it's 2.
I just, yes, exactly. I turned that around.
When we tried to do 1 mile both ways, we were out of whack.
Right? Yeah, we would be adding
adding
staff, which get, and plus more buses, too.
Right.
And what about ride times? Do you anticipate that you're still going to be able to stay within those guidelines? Is it 45 minutes or an hour? So,
changing this, half a mile or a mile for these kids, we're going to be passing there. These buses that are running these routes right now.
Okay.
Passing there, pick them up.
Right.
Okay. Especially with Tina's ability to look at specific routes, do the routing. Equipment that she utilizes to where routes that are a little bit longer in length, we're staying away from them.
Yeah.
We're utilizing other routes and capacity.
Raining won't be affected at all.
Very impressive.
Yeah.
So the kids are already taking the bus, is it right? Are you saying their routes will not change?
No.
So the ones who are impacted would be the ones who aren't currently taking the bus, that they would need to be reached and.
Correct. I just route that bus in here. If I could put this bus stop in here, that's going to be new bus stop.
Got it, yeah.
Driving by there because it's going to be closer to town, by that school stop, pick that stop up.
So the route may be a couple stops longer than they currently have.
Correct. Right. That was my goal, is not to change the kids now that are on buses.
That's awesome.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
As we move forward from tonight, what are we going to be doing to continue look at busing issues and so forth?
Student numbers on buses is a big
the
thing that I
on
count
the buses,
on. Yes.
But also the routes just the transportation issues that our district has in general. How could you tell us a little bit about what's going to happen in beginning, I think,
Absolutely.
In January?
Yeah. Ms. Sherrick and I, we've been charged with leading a transportation committee that we're excited to do and collaborating with community members, having conversations about transportation, and also creating more awareness about what's all involved in transportation as well. So that's going to start up in January to where, again, some parents are going to be part of a transportation committee to help us understand, and also we can help them understand. And it's going to be a good collaboration moving forward. We're excited for it.
Yeah. Let me ask, and I don't know if you're at this point. When you put together the districting committee, or you had a procedure for parents to volunteer so that every building was represented, and so forth, are you going to follow something similar to that?
Well, to be honest with you, Mr. Smith, we're kind of vetting through that right now. Okay. How can we make sure that we get a good, outlook from all of our stakeholders from various areas of our district? That's one thing that we do want to make sure that we do. How we can get that word out, et cetera, for those that are interested. We're thinking about a couple of different things, but also our principals know a lot of our parents and those that have an interest in transportation already. So that might be the avenue we go for first, is asking our experts in the building for parents they know who are interested in transportation. And through conversations, provided from phone calls to us at the board office or to transportation, we know some parents already that are highly interested and really vested in transportation. Mm-hmm. So we're going to get some honest feedback and have some great conversations to really make us think and reflect moving forward. Mm-hmm. So,
thank you. Yep.
I think, too, the bonus we have is just a fresh set of eyes, how mm-hmm. eyes look at things, and when you bring in a new set of eyes, they see things from a different angle. So we just needed Tina to have a little bit of time to get right. settled in her role and be able to understand the complexities of our district and et cetera. And so she's done a nice job of identifying some things that could help run a little more efficiently. I think even her own admission, the way we're going to roll it out in January, wouldn't be the ultimate way for her to do it, but she will restructure everything for the start of the year then and be running even more efficient routes come August.
Nice. She wants to touch all the kids now.
Right. Well, I really appreciate that, because I know there were a lot of concerns there were some concerns from some parents of the high school students in Mill Valley, and I think that kind of got a conversation started, but then I just think that what you all have done has just gone above and beyond, and I mean, really address, like you said, really looking at the entire picture for the entire district, and what areas do we think need some work, and helping the K through 6 is huge. I think cutting that down to a mile is really that's really good,
and that's what's so impressive
with almost no additional cost at all. So I really appreciate the work, the time, and effort you put into it, because you had to go through the redistricting at the beginning, and I'm sure that was pretty challenging, and you probably got lots of phone calls. And
I think the other thing, we looked at lots of options, so the board knows. Mm-hmm. We looked at cluster stops, and mm-hmm. Could we set up some cluster stops around and have people bring their kids in? But then mm-hmm. it became kind of a first come, first serve, and did we want to get into who signed up first and who didn't sign up first?
Right.
And so this seemed to be the kind of a clean way to do it with clear expectations for all. Yeah. And certainly I think you've all heard me tell horror stories of watching kindergartners walk down the middle of 6th Street
right.
to school because people haven't shoveled their sidewalks. And while I don't like that for any kid, it is different for a kindergarten than a high school student.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And so certainly keeping that eye on moving K-6 to a little bit closer made a lot of sense.
Right.
Yeah, I really like that.
Yes.
I want to thank both of you, because I know, and everybody else that's been involved in this, because mm-hmm. I know it's not a singular task by any means. And I can't imagine the complexity of trying to put this thing together. So thank you very much.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Tina
deserves that credit.
Yes.
Pretty
exciting.
Thank you very much, Tina.
Yeah.
Thank you. So I guess the next move is next month we will actually have a resolution or a recommendation that we would vote on.
Next month will be a recommendation for me for the board to move those boundaries. And if you have any questions, feel free to
call me.
Okay.
To call, and we'll get them worked out.
Okay. Great. Well, thank you so much. Let's see. Next up, a presentation regarding preliminary data results from last school year.
John Langhouse, the Assistant Superintendent for Marysville Schools, and I'm going to give a very brief and quick presentation in regards to our very preliminary state data based off of the 2014-2015 state assessments. And again, I want to stress the word preliminary. Because again, we are still within the window to where data is being cleaned up through our EMIS reporting, etc., due to attendance, a variety of issues to where, again, this data is extremely preliminary in nature. So I'm just going to run you through just each building, just a quick look. And again, that data may change based on this next month or so and how that data will change due to cleanup. So again, very, very tentative. Also, too, want to preface it that last year, 2014-15, was really a one-and-done year for the state of Ohio due to the park assessments for ELA and mathematics, the air assessments for science and social studies. The assessments last year looked nothing like the assessments previously. And now the assessments this year do not look like the assessments last year. So again, 14-15 was really a unique, nuanced, one-and-done year. So also keep that in mind as well. We'll start off with Edgewood. There's five indicators, academic indicators at this point, four elementary K-4 buildings. Edgewood, as it appears now, will reach three of those five indicators, not quite reaching the mark. In third grade reading, as well as in fourth grade mathematics. And I know the team is already collaborating, problem solving, making instructional changes based on this data already this school year. Mill Valley Elementary, again, preliminary. Looks like they're going to reach 5 out of 5 of the indicators for academic achievement this school year in both grades 3 and 4. Also, just so you know, there is no science assessment for our K-4 buildings. Navin Elementary, at this point, it looks like Navin will achieve 4 of the 5 indicators at this point. Not reaching the mark in grade 3 reading, but again, very tentative data, preliminary at this point. And again, Navin's looking, reflecting, making instructional changes, really looking at data hard and being very intentional this year. Northwood Elementary, preliminary, it looks like it will reach 5 out of 5 indicators for academic achievement in both grades 3 and 4. Raymond Elementary, also, it appears, will reach 5 out of the 5 indicators for both reading and mathematics, as well as social studies, grades 3 and 4. You see grade 4 ELA and grade 4 social studies were extremely high data points for Raymond Elementary at this point. And two, I kind of want to preface it as well. When you're looking at these percentages, and if a yes or no, the yes is did we meet the indicator, the no is if we did not. But too, when you look at the percentages, I guess I should have explained, you see some higher percentages, you see some lower percentages. You might see some lower percentages and be like, well, how's that meeting an indicator? Well, the state of Ohio, depending on the grade, depending on the subject, a certain percentage of students had to be proficient or higher for that building and or the district to obtain it. An example would be grade 8 mathematics. Only 51% of our 8th graders needed to be proficient or higher in order for our middle school to achieve the indicator, where just a year before that, it was 80%. It's due to the increased rigor of the assessments, as well as the curriculum, and it's the norming of the assessments that the state is doing as well. So depending on the grade, depending on the subject, that passage rate is different. So, again, keep that in mind as well as you look at the different results. Creekview Intermediate, or 5-6 building, appears will meet 6 out of 6 of the indicators, grade 5 and 6 ELA mathematics, as well as grade 6 social studies and grade 5 science. Bunsell Middle School, again, preliminary. Looks like we'll achieve all indicators available to Bunsell Middle School. I do have an asterisk by two of these, just to kind of explain it a little bit. And again, it's the nuances and uniqueness to 14-15. To where you see 100% of our Algebra 1 kids at Bunsell Middle School achieve proficient or higher. That's great. That's exciting. We would expect a high percentage. You might be thinking, well, why is that? Because in Marysville schools, we challenge students to move forward to higher levels if they want that challenge. And instead of taking grade 8 mathematics, some of our higher level students that want to challenge in math were able to take Algebra 1 as an 8th grade student. Therefore, they took the Algebra 1 assessment. Every single student achieved proficient or higher last year. Which also means, well, you look at the grade 8 math score, 69%. Yes, we met the indicator, all right? But again, what percentage did a building need in order to get the indicator? 51%. The rationale behind that was the state was like, well, if you're challenging your students offering Algebra 1 in the middle school, a lot of your higher achievers are probably going to be in Algebra 1. So just think, if we had more of our higher math achievers in 8th grade math, would our percentage be higher? Absolutely. But do we want to make decisions based on what we're going to get on a report card, or we want to do what's best by kids? Well, we're going to do what's best by kids and challenge them. Early college, high school, at this point with the four indicators that they were able to achieve, two of those would be met. Now, there are two huge asterisks here that I need to point out. And I really want to start with the biggest asterisk that does not paint even a remotely close picture of the achievement going on at our early college high school. You see, for physical science, 33% of our students achieve proficient or higher. We had approximately 143 students at the early college high school last year. That 33% was taken from 21 students that took the assessment last year. You might be thinking, well, what happened to the other 120 kids? They disappeared? No. What happened was early college high school challenged students who wanted to be challenged, double-blocked their physical science. They were able to complete the course before the state even had the assessment made, and they were given a grandfather score, not included in this data. So it doesn't paint the picture of our achievement in physical science at the early college high school. So again, for all of our buildings, we need to make sure that we have a true understanding of what the data actually means. We just can't look at a number. Algebra 1 for early college high school, 84%. You're probably thinking, boy, that's really good. Well, it is, but we feel it could have been better. Because a lot of our kids took Algebra 1 already when they were in Bunsell Middle School. So their scores weren't even included in this. So again, not a true representation of the achievement going on. Geometry, 77%. A lot of schools would be pleased with that, but that 77% is because, again, of the challenge, the mastery of learning going on there, to where our teachers spent more time with Algebra 1 to do right by kids, got a little bit later of a start with our geometry, still completed the required curriculum. Students knew everything that they needed to know by the end of the school year. We just didn't meet that testing window that was established by the state of Ohio. So again, Marysville chose to do right by kids, not just try to get a score on a local report card. Marysville High School, it appears, will achieve all but one of the indicators for achievement at this point. Again, preliminary results. American government and U.S. history, the reason why there's asterisks there, that also includes our AP scores in those data points. We are 0.15% away, if my math is correct, on the American government indicator. So that's the difference of one child at this point. And again, that could change based on the data cleanup that the state allows. Asterisk by Algebra 1, because again, some of our higher level achievers, they already did Algebra 1 a year ago in middle school. They didn't have an opportunity to take the official assessment. They got grandfather points. Also, geometry, you see 100%. Well, why 100%? Again, our students that already took it in middle school as eighth graders, there are more advanced math students. We should be looking and seeing hopefully 100% geometry last year. Because again, those are our higher achievers that want to be challenged by mathematics. So when we look at the big picture for our district as a whole, as you take the building results, you combine them all, and what does Marysville look like? When you look at reading, we will, it appears, meet all the indicators for grade 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, and 9 for English Language Arts. We're close on that grade 3 reading OAA. Confident we're going to get it, though. When you think about the state average passage rate, what's the average in the state of Ohio? You know, for Marysville, grade 4 ELA, 82.5% of our kids passed the grade 4 ELA, proficient or higher. The state has not yet released what the average across the state is. That's supposed to be released tomorrow, actually. So I'm excited to see what that is. Some concern, though, that we see is our gap data. And again, preliminary data. Our students with disabilities, we're a little bit concerned about how we're performing. So we're definitely going to be taking a closer look at that this year and seeing what improvements we can do for that particular population of students to support them to be more successful. Our economically disadvantaged data is not yet available, so I can't present that here this evening. Mathematics, grades 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, Algebra 1 and Geometry. It looks like Marysville schools, we will achieve all academic indicators. So that's exciting news. Again, we won't know the average passing rate until tomorrow, hopefully. Our gap, our students with disabilities, only 40% of our students achieve proficient or higher. Again, we're not happy with that, and we're going to see what we can do differently in order to improve that moving forward. But again, I don't think we're ever happy, totally happy with the data. We always want to improve things no matter where we're at. So again, we'll be looking at that closely. Social studies. It looks like grade 4, 6, American government and history, all but one we should achieve. The indicator for our district, again, 0.15% off from achieving that. For our sciences across the district, it looks like we will achieve every single indicator for the state of Ohio. So that is exciting. So when it looks like across the district, all academic achievement indicators will be met, except for one at this point, and it's American government, and we're 0.15 off. So we'll have to wait to see what happens in the next month or two. Now, they do have state average passage rates for across the state of Ohio. What's the average percentage passage for a district of proficient or higher students? What's interesting is for anything social studies, as you can see, Marysville really outperformed the state average, which is exciting. Same thing with science. You can see that we did achieve higher than what the state average was with any of the science subjects as well. So that's some exciting data to celebrate, but definitely don't become complacent. Definitely is going to motivate us even to get higher and higher. Because again, that standard's only going to get higher every year as well. Now, to close out this presentation now, I really want you to take this whole presentation with a grain of salt. These are preliminary results. It's very tentative. You can't take it to the bank, all right? Because a lot of cleanup is going to happen over the next month, month and a half, before the official grade card is released in January or February. Why is it taking so long? It's because last year was a new assessment year. They had the norm, all the assessments. We usually would have seen all this data back in September. It was a brand new assessments last year across the state of Ohio in 2014 and 15. Keep that in mind. Marysville Schools was innovative, on the cutting edge, moved forward with going online for all except for about 10 kids who took paper pencil. Because that's the world our kids are going to live in today and into the future. So let's get on board right away and just move forward. So again, first year of true online assessments for our district. Park, ELA Math, no longer exist for the state of Ohio this school year. Value-added data, how kids grow from one year to the next. It won't be comparing apples to apples when that's released. You just need to keep that in mind, because you'll be comparing OAA data to a brand new assessment. So moving targets and increased rigor, the percentage taken for one subject, one grade level, it's a different target depending where you're at. And the increased rigor of the assessments as well is factored into this. Also keep in mind, at Marysville Schools, we choose to challenge students, not just to go for a test score on the local report card. We feel at the end of the day, we have to do right by students, not how can we get the best local report card, grade card. So does that make sense? Mm-hmm. We want to challenge kids. We could have not double blocked kids last year in physical science. We could have had them all do year long. But the principal and leadership and everybody were like, no, we need to do what's right by kids. Some districts chose to do otherwise, but not us. Truly, in my opinion, you won't be able to trust scores until the 2016-17 results are posted, as this will be the second year of the same assessments being utilized by the state. This is the first year of new assessments that should stay somewhat consistent now moving forward. Last year was a huge transition year, a lot of changes, a lot of legislative changes occurred over the summer with assessments. So again, this year we're establishing our new baseline and we'll go up from there. Where are we going to be at? 14-15 was a one and done year. Please keep that in mind. Everything has changed. And you know what? We're seeing some positive changes already this year based on preliminary data and the exciting instructional practices going on in our schools. So that is the presentation, preliminary results. Do you have any questions?
I guess I wanted to, could you refresh our memories on that, the testing window timeline, because I think it's, you know, I remember our kids were taking these tests.
Absolutely.
At not a very good time.
Yes. Last year, students were testing February and March, as well as April and May. Mm-hmm. There were two very large testing windows throughout the state of Ohio, mm-hmm. which took a lot of instructional time away mm-hmm. from our teachers and learning right. time from our kids. The state of Ohio has definitely moved in the right direction this year with one testing window that will take place in April and May this right. year.
Which makes so much more sense, because then you've got all that instructional time
right.
behind them to so they and can two, show what they learned.
Yeah. And the challenges of weather within right. the February right. and March testing window was another unique right. aspect of that. So, yep, sure. So that's different for this year and a positive change moving forward.
Right.
Mm-hmm. What's the new assessment system called?
It is through AERS.
Okay.
Yes.
And you're confident that is going to be consistent for several years?
Well,
this set of assessments are created by Ohio teachers. So they pulled teachers together. They're creating those assessments. The issue is time frame. Like, we haven't received a blueprint. We haven't received the things that teachers use to think about how they're going to set up their instructional time a little bit and emphasis. Do I think there will be revisions to them along the way? Absolutely. I don't think it'll be a major overhaul like we're seeing with the park.
And to the testing system, we're confident that, you know, I have to compliment the Marysville team, our school test coordinators, our test administrators in the building. I mean, really knocked it out of the ballpark last year compared to a lot of districts that were not so positive experience. Mm-hmm. It's just a compliment to the people we have in Marysville that knocked it out. Mm-hmm. And this year's going to be even better, especially because it's one testing system, not two systems that we have to learn. Mm-hmm. And it's the much more user-friendly system for students and teachers this year. So it's only going to keep getting better and better.
We were warned early on with the park that right. the rigor and depth was much more complex. And that if you had students who typically scored accelerated or advanced, expect them to be proficient. Mm-hmm. So as you look at some of those scores, I mean, my assumption really is around that's why the number shifted. Instead of having 80% across the board to meet your indicator, that's why there's a varying score associated mm-hmm. with that this year. So I think that will continue. That will continue to grow and alter too as the system calms down a little bit.
Thanks for sharing them. Yeah.
Yep. Thank you, Jonathan.
All right. Next up, a presentation regarding our medical self-insurance.
Sorry. I'll go ahead and start while
okay.
they're queuing up the presentation. So I'm Lynette Foth, the director of HR. I have with me tonight Cheryl Mueller. She's from Horan, who was our benefits broker. So she's going to actually do the presentation. But I wanted to just give a little bit of background about why we're here and why we're giving this presentation. So probably the beginning of this year, maybe even the end of last year, the fiscal office, Todd's office, and HR started talking about some of the ways that we can begin looking at our insurance programs and better managing costs and trying to do what's right for employees, but also right by the board and our expenses, because we know that benefits are a very expensive piece of what we do in the district. It's about $4.4 million that we pay out a year in medical premiums. So we wanted to start looking at some other opportunities. And we started talking about self-insured. We are currently a fully insured plan for our medical. Started talking about self-insured and met with Horan in August when they came on board as our consultant and told kind of what our expectations were. Initially, I didn't think we were going to move to this until 2017. I sort of thought that it was a little lofty to move in 2016, but Todd's fiscal advice kind of led us to January of 2016, which is great. It's not as administratively challenging as I thought it would be, and Horan has been great in leading us through that. So in September, we met with the insurance committee. We shared with them that we were making the recommendation to move to self-insured, so that's what we'll be doing in January. As part of that, one of the biggest pieces that I think is a plus, in addition to hopefully saving the district money short-term and long-term, is that we're able to go into 2016 with no increase to premium, no change to our plans for our employees. And that's something, I don't know, Dick, I think you sat on the insurance committee maybe a long time. I don't think we've ever, since we started paying for insurance, been able to do that. So that is a plus for employees. It's nice
and
that they don't have to.
I know we have had some self-funding plan in place long ago.
So, and that was before my time. When I came in 2008, I think we had just switched from no premiums, where employees were paying no premiums, to now paying premiums. So I'm pleased that I was excited to be able to send out the open enrollment email this year and say, no change in your plans, no premium increase. So I hope that employees are happy too. Again, Cheryl is here because she's kind of the expert on the self-funding piece. Todd will chime in if he's got anything to add. So we'll let her share with you.
You've mentioned the Benefits Committee. And okay. The Benefits Committee got started some time ago. And it really was an opportunity for the Teachers Association and board administrative teams to sit down and work collaboratively together. And this has been going on for, I think, since 1991 is when that committee first came together. And it has, from my perspective, really helped in terms of getting information into the hands of teachers, into the hands of administrators, so that people have a better idea of what their coverages are, but maybe more importantly, what the cost factors and so forth
right.
on into
it. And it's a good working group. They ask a lot of questions. I think they're knowledgeable. So it's good that we've had, you know, our brokers in the past and now Horan coming on board that come in and educate the committee so that, like you said, they go out. We have a rep in just about every building, and they go out and then try to help, because we're in open enrollment right now. Tomorrow is the end of open enrollment. And employees have lots of questions. Even not making a single plan change, people still have lots of questions about our plan. So the committee's been great. The people that sit on the committee are wonderful in helping be that person in the building, because, you know, we can try to help all 600 employees when they have questions, but sometimes that's hard, and sometimes it's easier just to go to that building rep. So
yeah, the committee has been invaluable to all of the things that we do with insurance. Cheryl?
Okay, well, I'm going to walk you through this presentation. This is what was given to the Benefits Committee on November 9th, and it was just education on what is self-funding, how does it work, how does it impact the district, what are the pros, what are the cons, and why is this a decision that we've made moving forward. I apologize because this is not rich math. This is pretty boring stuff. So hang in there. I'm so sorry. So I just will spend a little bit of time talking about self-funding versus fully insured. What we're talking about is medical insurance. How do you pay for your medical insurance? So do we pay the carrier a premium each month? So do we pay United Healthcare a premium each month? Or do we pay administration fees and then pay the claims each month? So we either pay the insurance company or we basically pay ourselves to pay for claims. And that is what self-funding does. So self-funding allows for the district to pay the claims when they occur, not if they occur. So you have to have a few things going for you in order for this to be a good setup, but we're going to talk about that. So I'll just touch on this. The employer holds 100% of the risk as opposed to the carrier holding 100% of the risk. So you typically can avoid some fees because of where the risk is held. So if you want to go to the next one. So as you can tell, when you're fully insured, there's less risk out there. And when we're talking about risk, we're talking about exposure to claims dollars through medical insurance. So insurance is designed to cover the cost of the unknown. So when you don't know what you're exposed to as far as healthcare conditions, that can be scary. Fully insured allows you to pay a premium that protects you whether you have billions of dollars in claims or $0 in claims. It's very static. You know exactly what that cost is. Self-funding is a little more risky because you're at the exposure of how your employees use the medical plan. So this chart is just designed to show you fully insured is less risky, self-insurance is more risky, but whenever there's more risk, there's more reward, and that's what we're going to talk about. So when we evaluate, we work with a lot of different school districts, and we try to evaluate good candidates for self-funding because the benefits are, they pay off, so we want to make sure that we have good candidates. So we typically see groups with over 100 employees enrolled in coverage, a growing or stable workforce, favorable age, sex, demographics, and then a consistent cash flow. And typically, the employers that are interested in self-funding their medical insurance, they want to long-term, they use long-term cost management. There's a commitment from the staff to evaluate and try to find cost-saving solutions. Employer-sponsored health awareness or prevention programs, which you guys do have in place. You want control over your plan design and greater flexibility in cost management and better utilization for reporting, which is helpful when we're trying to make decisions. So some of the poor candidates for self-funding, if you have cash flow problems, so like we said, it's all about how your medical claims are paid. So if you are not able to handle the ups and downs, sometimes you have a month where your costs are low and sometimes you have a month where maybe your costs are high. You have to be able to handle that fluctuation. If you have high employee turnover, that can be a detriment to the plan. And if you have a significantly declining workforce, that could be a problem. And then if you have a significant number of high-cost claimants, if you have a lot of people on your health plan with very bad health or problems or chronic diseases, that can potentially be a huge problem for your finances. And then lack of financial discipline to fund a reserve account. Anytime you have a self-funded account, anytime it's gone bad, is when an employer does not have the discipline to set aside a reserve account for the, you know, the what-if scenarios. And then an unwillingness to participate in managing the plan. So what happens is when Horan comes in and we do some evaluations, it becomes very apparent to us either this is a good candidate or it's a bad candidate. And based on what we saw, you guys had everything in line, ready to go. You actually looked like a very good candidate for self-funding. And so some of the advantages are, and I won't read all of them, but the administration fees are lower. The risk, when in a fully insured environment, when the carrier takes on the risk, they're going to charge you for that. In a self-insured environment, you can typically save on quite a bit of that. And then the big one here is the state premium tax is avoided. Currently, you're fully insured. Fully insured medical plans are governed by the state of Ohio. Self-funded plans are governed by ERISA, which is the federal government, so you avoid state premium tax if you're self-funded because it's governed by the federal government, not the state. That's 1.8%. in medical plan costs that are avoided. As for now, just simple math, every 1% is worth $50,000. So when we start doing the math just in fees that you'll never recover, it starts to make sense. And then with healthcare reform, there are a lot of additional taxes and fees that have been added to fully insured plans. So when we do this math, it equates to about 3.3% in taxes and fees for the Affordable Care Act. So when you have groups that have the size population that you have, it seems like something to evaluate, and it looked good.
And if I may, what you're saying is that we're going to, in terms of risk assumption, we're going to increase the risk, but what you're proposing is not risky.
Right, and I'm going to show you that in just a second. So in self-funding, you're not totally exposed to all risk. You purchase different types of insurance that will protect you in the event of catastrophic claims, and we'll talk about that because I'll show you the breakdown of what that looks like. We kind of already talked about this page. We'll just skip through that. All right, so this is where it gets to the meat of the conversation. So there's three components of fixed costs. So in self-funding, you have your fixed costs, and then you have your claims. And these are the fixed costs. You have administration fees, you have a specific deductible, and you have an aggregate deductible. The administration fee says, UnitedHealthcare, we don't want to decide if we should pay someone's claim if they go to the doctor or not. Can you take care of that for us? We'll pay you a fee each month to do that for us. So they're going to administer the claims for us. Then we're going to pay a fee to cover the district in the event that one person, the specific deductible, if one person on your plan has a $1 million claim, that could blow up the financial pot that is set aside for medical claims for the district. The specific deductible it's not at the employee level, it's at the school level. So right now you guys have a $150,000 deductible that says in the event that somebody has a catastrophic claim, it's $1 million, the district is responsible for the first $150,000, and then the insurance will pick up anything over that. So that's one form of protection. The other form is this aggregate deductible, and the aggregate deductible says, well, if 50 people here had claims that were $149,000, that could blow up your plan. So the aggregate deductible is also, there's a fee that you pay each month to the insurance companies that will cover you in the event that the whole thing could crumble. So there's protections in place to cover you. So while you're self-funded, you're going to pay a portion. So those three things combined equal your fixed costs. And your fixed cost is typically a percentage of your overall spend, but it's typically between 10 and 15% of the big picture. So the big picture is the claim. The admin and fixed costs are much smaller. And so just one more thing, those three things equal your fixed cost. You are going to pay them regardless of if you ever use the plan. And so then the claims are your claims. You're going to pay for the claims that occur. So if I go to the doctor, if I go to the hospital, if there's an emergency room visit, those are claims that you're going to pay. So you have your fixed costs, which are those three components we just talked about, and then you've got your claims. And when you add all of those components together, that equals your expected overall medical spend. And once we have that, we create what we call fully insured equivalents that give us how much each person will pay and the tiers in which they pay. Any questions so far? Okay. And so components of self-funding, you need a third-party administrator, a TPA. And in this case, in the case that you guys have right now, that third party is still UnitedHealthcare. And this is why somebody in the committee asked us, they said, well, what are my employees going to feel when we go self-funded? And the answer is nothing. They're not going to know anything because self-funding is a form of how you pay. It's not a form of anything else. So what this looks like is the third party here is still UnitedHealthcare. The network is still UnitedHealthcare. The pharmacy is still UnitedHealthcare. And the stop loss, which is that $150,000 limit, is still UnitedHealthcare. So all of the components that in some situations these could all be carved out and put at different companies. In this situation, they're all with UnitedHealthcare. So it's one of the easiest ways to transition into self-funding. And this is just an example of what I was talking about. So your stop loss provides protection against large claims. So again, it protects the employer, not the employee. The employee is protected with their medical plan. They have deductibles and out-of-pocket maximums, but The two types are the specific, which protects the individual at the individual level, and then the aggregate protects the whole group. And I kind of just mentioned this, but this is an example. So we'll just look at Jane Smith has a claim of $400,000. So in the course of 12 months, let's say that she has a very horrible situation and her health is on the line, and it's at the end of 12 months, she spent $400,000 in claims. Marysville is going to pay up to $150,000 on her behalf, and then the rest is picked up by the stop loss, and that's $250,000. So you're not exposed to that part. And then the aggregate, it sets an annual cap for the limit that the plan will pay. So like I said before, the easiest way to think about this is in the event that, 50 people got super duper sick and, the costs were outrageous, the aggregate stop loss coverage would set a cap on the maximum exposure for the school, and that protection would kick in and you'd be covered. So when we set rates and when we're talking about health insurance, we say, okay, Todd, this is your expected liability. In a worst case scenario, it could hit this ceiling. In a great scenario, it could be well under the expected. So as long as you're comfortable with this range, this is where you're going to operate. So that was what we talked about with the committee. it's a lot, so do you guys have any questions? Okay.
I do. Okay, so when the insurance company pays the doctor, and the doctor bills $136, say, and the insurance company says, we'll pay you $46, that's the acceptable blah, 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 blah. Do we operate the same way under this?
So part of that administrative fee is still the negotiated discounted rate. So you're paying UnitedHealthcare for their negotiated rate.
Okay.
Yep. So then at the end of a year, let's say that it's been a great year and everybody's been really healthy, so the premiums collected are much more than what the claims paid out. So does that go into next year, like calculating next year's premiums? I mean, it's just, it would just stay in our reserve account?
I can answer that, and we'll be hitting that at our December meeting. So I'll be bringing a resolution to create a self-insurance fund. It'll be an 024 fund, and that will segregate all of these self-insurance monies. They will be set aside in a separate fund. And really, to me, this is why this makes sense, is because if we do have a good year and premiums are well above claims, those premiums will sit in that self-insurance fund and build up a reserve.
Okay.
And one of the things that we do to make sure that that's a good idea is we do what's called a self-funded retro. So we take your information and we look back 3 years and we say, what if you would have been self-funded for the last 3 years? And it helps give us an idea as to how your plan operates, how your plan runs versus the premium you collect versus the claims that go out. And it looks like, and if you have a good year, it could be a good year.
Okay. And did the committee talk at all about, I'm not sure what all kind of wellness programs we have in the district, so maybe just a quick little update on that.
So we do, we have a wellness incentive program that we do each year, and we require the employees to do two things, which is either an annual health assessment or a biometric screening, and then the online health risk assessment, which they do online through UnitedHealthcare. And then we give them a third option. They have to get up to 200 points where they can, whether they're in a running program or they're going for their mammogram or their other preventative visits, so we allow them to earn up to 200 points, trying to get them to take charge and make sure that, a lot of things we find are hit in that preventative visit. So we want everyone to get their preventative visit. It's covered 100% under all of our plans. So that's one of the things that we do for wellness. We try to do incentives throughout the year. We do like a Biggest Loser. This year we encourage people to participate in Community Challenge. We've done some of the other things that we've done. Weight loss challenges. So we try to do different things throughout the year. One of the things that impressed us with Horan, when we talked to Horan, is they kind of have a team of wellness people. So we'd like to build on our wellness. Right now, our wellness program is for employees only. We don't make the spouse do anything. A lot of organizations have moved to making the spouses participate. Some organizations have moved to results-based You know, you have to have your cholesterol within a certain level, and then you get a certain number of points. So we encourage people in those ways. And right now we charge extra. You pay an extra 5% if you don't participate in the wellness program. And we had about 29 people this year that didn't, which is about the same as we had last year. So we've got some that just, they just don't want to do it, and that's their choice. But we're hoping that Horan will help us kind of look at our wellness program and how can we vamp it up a little bit more. How can we show that what we've done has been a return on our investment? How can we show that doing the biometric screenings every year and making people a little more aware of what their blood pressure is, their cholesterol, are we seeing those numbers go up or down, whichever mm-hmm. they should? So they'll help us a lot with that in this coming year.
And I think that there are two things that go into, I always say, like getting your house in order before you go self-funded, and that is wellness, which we've evaluated. You guys have, you're pretty good so far compared to other districts that we work with. I mean, there's always room to do better, but you're still in a pretty good spot. So it's wellness and consumerism. And so what you want to do is, you know, the district spends quite a bit of money on a benefit package for your employees, and you want to make sure that it's viewed that way, that it's viewed as a benefit and it's an investment in your people. But at the same time, I always think, well, if I was going to pay for every time every person in this room ever went to the doctor or ever there was something wrong with you, I would be like, well, could we all go for a walk and eat broccoli because this is my paycheck, you know? And that's kind of the same kind of attitude that we're hoping to inspire within the insurance committee, so that everybody tries to be accountable for their care and can use the benefits that are gifted to them. And so it seems to be moving in the right direction. It seems to be pretty positive, so...
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. And I don't, there was no public participation, I don't think. Nope. Okay. Okay. The next up, we will move to the superintendent's report.
All right. Silly construction, finally, right? So Peggy Murphy and Adam Drexel are here tonight to kind of give us a update on the early college. I've been updating you through my weekly updates, but ask them to come to our monthly meetings and talk to you about where we are and where we're headed.
Thanks for having us.
Sure. Thanks for hanging in there.
Yeah.
A little bit. Sorry.
It's been a really interesting evening. I don't think we don't have a PowerPoint. We have a lot of news, but I think that Diane's probably told you that, and you're probably aware of the project that's going on at the Early College High School. It's basically the second phase of construction there to finish up one of the wings, and then there's a few other areas that we're touching. And of their four areas, they're all going very well. I think, like the rich math sort of thing, there's a lot of teamwork involved, and I heard her use a couple buzzwords like get in and get messy and get dirty. We don't have any contractors on the floor, but we do have a great team of contractors working together. So we're at a point now where we're actually, after we started, we went in and pulled a lot of things apart, dug up the floors, made a lot of dirt. You've probably seen a lot of that. We're at a point where we've put all that back together, and we're actually bringing finishes in. So we're on schedule to finish the classroom area by the end of the year so that the students can move in at, I guess, January 6th is our date.
Great.
There.
So I got to talk about the kitchen.
You get to talk about the kitchen.
The kitchen has been a little more of a challenge. We've got the floor pulled up in there, and we found underneath the floor, being an older building, and being out of service, that there's some issues with the sanitary pipe, and it's just kind of falling apart in some areas. So we're working together with the engineer and architect and Mike, try to get the kitchen back together, and then buy some time. So hopefully this summer or something like that, that the rest of the pipes can be fixed. So definitely a lot of teamwork going on with the kitchen. But the classrooms are looking good. Paint's going on, and windows and stuff will be going in here before too long on the inside and doors. And looking forward to turning it over to you guys.
Okay. I know we've seen all of the
drapes
or whatever, the blue tarps and all that kind of stuff. So I haven't had a chance to go in there yet. Okay, yeah. I mean, and you don't, like, no issues with the weather coming up and all that kind of stuff. So
we're ready for it.
Good.
It's been nice. We've had some decent weather.
You've had great weather.
Yeah.
Haven't you?
So.
Okay.
It could stay like that. We're not complaining.
Okay. Well, yeah. I mean, I'm anxious to go in and see, so. Is it still hard hat?
Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
If you want to go in there, though, just make sure you go with Garrett. He's our superintendent.
Okay.
He can give you a tour for sure.
Okay.
Or let Mike know when you're coming. He can call Garrett.
Right.
Just love to show you around.
Okay. Great.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for your patience.
No problem.
Also, wanted to let you know that the Elk Dictionary donation took place on November 11th. So I guess they've been doing it for several years. The Elks make sure that every third grader in our school district has a dictionary in hand. That took place this month. So we certainly thank Kermit Morris and his group for that work. Also wanted to update you a little bit on my trip to Boston. Had an opportunity to go to Boston in conjunction with Pathways to Prosperity. We networked and really looked at workforce development as a national issue and looked at everyone's regional approaches or state approaches, however that panned out for each place. Each one has a different strategy. We also talked about relationships with colleges and issues with teacher credentialing and what different states were doing to try to address that issue with everyone has a similar, although it's not called College Credit Plus, but everyone has a similar program. And also we talked about community partners. Certainly we were able to brag a lot about the partnerships we have in that forum, so I had the opportunity to share things that were happening in the Central Ohio region and in Marysville. So that was a great opportunity to build some connections and share resources as well. Also, Capital Conference has taken place. The past month's been really busy, I guess. So saw a couple of you down there in our visits. Todd and I actually sat in an interesting meeting with capped school districts talking about some of the interest and maybe taking some action or what kind of lobbying force we would have as cap districts, which really turned into a conversation on charters. And maybe there was a little more momentum with the idea of talking about charters and charter school funding as well. And I also wanted to revisit B teams. I know we had a couple emails about B teams. At the middle school this year, there is a boys 7th and 8th grade B team sponsored through the YMCA and a girls combo 7th and 8th grade basketball team. They did not feel they would have the numbers for two separate teams for a B team. So our partnership with the Y really, in effect, they are paying the same $200 pay to participate. However, that money is being turned over directly to the YMCA. And they are paying for the coaches, officials, equipment, all of the needs for that. As you all know, pay-to-participate fees don't even cover the supplemental contracts for coaches. So this was a way that we could offer that and use the Y as a resource. So the coaches are actually a employee of the YMCA. After school, the school district transports students from Bunzl to the Y for practice every day. They did work out a schedule where most of the home games are going to be played at Bunzl, though. So we were pretty excited that that could work out. I know Don Shoemaker has been working. So it is a nice collaboration. And it's kind of our first time at trying something a little different that way. So those are up and running currently as well.
Okay. I know. I really appreciate that because I know it's giving more students an opportunity, and that's what we wanted. So.
Yeah, we want them to be involved in positive activities
exactly.
And not find other activities.
That's right.
That's all I have.
Okay, great. Thank you. That's exciting stuff. Have you had a chance to talk to Eric at all about your trip to Boston?
A little bit in passing.
Okay.
We met. They had the Dean of Engineering in at the Early College Building this week from Ohio State. Discussing some potential opportunities for the 33 corridor and a relationship with Ohio State. So.
Okay, good. All right, Todd?
Well, hopefully I'm not stealing any of Mr. Smith's thunder for his legislative report, but from the financial side, the state legislature recently passed Senate Bill 208. And why that is significant to us is that it has an impact on our tangible personal property reimbursement. I think it's safe to say this is somewhat a result of our lobbying efforts as well as the lobbying efforts of districts like ours over the past year. So that's a good thing. Unfortunately, we didn't quite get the result we wanted. You know, we're still going to lose our TPP funding in the long run. But on the good news side is the phase out was lessened. It was slowed down. So that is a good thing for the district. And just as a reminder, in our general fund, we do receive $5.6 million in tangible personal property tax per year. With the recently passed state budget beginning in this year, it is starting to be phased out to the tune of about $750,000 per year. Senate Bill 208, there's some districts who are actually impacted next year. There's no benefit to us in the current biennium, so this year and next year, fiscal year 17, it does not impact us. But beginning in fiscal year 18, there's a new formula for the phase-out that will benefit us to the tune of about $300,000. So our phase-out will go from $750,000 down to about $450,000. So where we would have been completely phased out of our $5.6 million by about 2023, that looks to be pushed back to about 2026 or 27. Okay. So it is good news.
Yeah. That is good.
Same results, it's just going to take longer to get.
Yeah. Okay, that's okay. We can keep working on it.
That's all
I've
got.
It? Okay. My report, let's see. And I know, I think Mr. Smith and Mr. Luke will maybe talk about this a little bit later, but I did want to bring up that we are continuing our community coffees, and that they met last Saturday at Tim Hortons, and it sounds like it was a little crowded there. So we did receive an email from Heidi Hansen, who is the owner of the new 5th Street Cafe at 117 East 5th Street, and she offered her place as a place for us to meet for our community coffee. So
I stopped by, and yeah. There will be the... Said
plenty of room.
Help out, and there's plenty of room, very accommodating. So.
Okay. Well, I like that. Yeah, part. I think that's nice. I know Tim Hortons, it was kind of affecting one of their entrances there, and it just was not.
Right. It was all right as long as we had four or five.
Right.
We had.
About eight to ten.
Well, we had 8 to 10 people that came, and Brian and
right.
myself, so we were about a dozen people.
Right.
I think we had a negative impact on. Tim Hortons
right.
efficiency.
That's not what we want to do. So
is this advertised on the website mainly?
Yeah. Well, we sent out an email.
Okay.
It is on the website too.
So I think if we advertise it ahead of time, we could do this for December.
Yeah. Okay.
Right. If you haven't been there, it's not hard to find. It's right on 5th Street.
It's where Bagel Island used to be.
Yeah. Well, that doesn't mean anything to me. It's,
okay.
it's next to Ribbon Box.
Yeah. Right.
Does that help?
Yep. Either one, yeah. Yep.
Anyway, it's a nice coffee shop. I've been there several times. I think it would work pretty well.
Yeah.
Right. Okay, so I think we'll make note of that and get our website updated. And so the next one would be December 12th at 9 o'clock.
Do we need to contact her and tell her we're...
Yeah, I will concur.
Okay.
I let her know that we would talk about it at the meeting tonight and that we'd let her know. So... let's see, then, just wanted to say that Mr. Smith and I both attended Creekview's first trimester RISE rally, RISE standing for Respectful, Innovative, Supportive, Excellent, and they had students that emceed the program and really highlighted a lot of great community partnerships, so they're celebrating positive behavior. Another thing, it kind of reminded me of your Rich Math things, that they had a video where students were talking about their aha moments. And it was just so interesting to listen to some of these kids say, you know, I really didn't like division, long division. And then I was listening to some other kids talking, aha, the light went off, you know. So it was pretty fun to watch. I had a Chamber of Commerce meeting this morning, and I was nominated to continue as the school representative on the Chamber Board. So I will continue to attend those meetings, and I'm on their Finance Committee as well. I also had a chance to thank the many businesses and individuals who continue to support our schools. I know that when we read our building notes, it's just amazing how many individuals and businesses are doing things to help us out, and I encourage them to let us know if they have needs, if they have ideas for additional ways to partner. So we just want to keep up this great collaboration that we have going on. Capital Conference, like Diane said, I attended several different seminars. Most of them on board development, leadership, things like that. So I went to 13 Tips for Better Board Culture. Attended a general session, really interesting. The speaker, Leland Melvin, is the only NFL player to have traveled in space. He's an educator, an engineer, former astronaut. He's the co-chair of STEM Education Task Force at the White House. So he was really, really great to hear. Went to a community engagement in action that was talking about small group discussions. And then one on from Ohio Leadership Advisory Council, or OLAC, where they were talking about resources for boards and administrators. They were talking about creating a climate for success, setting goals, monitoring progress, board commitment to student achievement for all students that leads to better outcomes for all. And really, at the end of the day, my overall impression, and I thought it was kind of interesting because Diane and I had the same, I think we had the same feelings. We came out of it that, wow, we're really doing a lot of things right here. You know, a lot of those breakout sessions, you look at them and you go, well, you know, we're already doing this, so do I really need to go to that one? And it felt good. You know, I know some of the things they were talking about was the importance of building principles as instructional leaders. How many times have we heard that here already? You know, so just a lot of great things going on here. Let's see, upcoming events. I know, Mr. Smith, you're signed up for the ED 411. That's on Friday, December 4th from 8 to 1 p.m. I'm going to be out of town, but I know that's a great, it's about economic development in this region, Central Ohio. Our next board meeting, another potential change here. We'd like to change the time to 5 o'clock instead of 7 o'clock because there is a choir concert that evening at 7. The high school holiday concert is at 7. So if everybody would be available to meet at 5 instead of 7, I think, have you checked with Amy? I think the meeting is at Mill Valley.
It is.
Okay. And you think she'd be okay with that, mm-hmm. too? All right.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, then we will. Are you all right with that, Brian? Good. And we'll do that. My only thing is just to encourage everybody. I don't know if the public can. Does the public see our building notes on board docs? Do you know, Chad? Have you ever looked to see if the building notes?
I don't know.
Okay. Well, you might want to check sometime because they are amazing to read. Again, I read through those and I'm just blown away by everything that is happening out in our district. So thank you so much for all the great things that are going on out there. And that's the end of my report. However, I will say a brief report for the Ohio High Point. Just to let you know, member Kevin Decco is no longer our representative, so I have been communicating with Caroline Ramsey of Honda, and she has she told me yesterday that they currently have 3 employees that are being vetted. They're all very capable and have experience in these kind of roles. And so she did not think that she would be able to get a name to me by our December meeting, but that she could have a name by the January meeting. So I also spoke with Superintendent Smith at High Point to let him know what we were doing and also kind of get a feel for what their meetings were going to be like. And he said the November meeting that was last night was just kind of a typical meeting, nothing too extraordinary on the agenda. However, their December meeting that's going to be on the 16th, the night before our meeting, is going to include a presentation that he's going to give. He thinks it's going to be about 45 minutes long that will be an assessment of the school as he sees it from his time. I think he started in July to now, and then also his vision and future plans. So if I'm able to, I'm going to try and attend that meeting just to see where he would like to take the district. And I also told Caroline Ramsey that if she has, you know, if she wants to give that date to those candidates as well, mm-hmm. that it might be a good idea for them to try and attend that meeting. So, and just let me know if you'd like to attend. The treasurer at High Point wanted me to give him a heads up if somebody wanted to go.
I'm fine if you attend.
Okay. And if I can't, I'll call someone else, right? Okay, that's it for me. Mr. Smith.
On the legislative front, at the conference in Columbus, there was a legislative update, and Senators Peggy Lehner and Joe Savarni, I'm mispronouncing his name, Representative John Patterson were all present and talked to the delegates that were there. Senator Lehner is a Republican. She is on the Senate Education Committee. She is the primary sponsor of the bill that was passed on charter school reform. A couple of things that she talked about. She said hopefully this year was going to be a quiet year. One of the early challenges is going to be the selection of a new state superintendent. She reported that the PARC test had been dropped because the originators of that test were not able to make the adjustments that had been recommended and from the state of Ohio. She hoped to address state funding, basically, you know, tax dollars ought to follow children, from her view. And she pointed out, because her audience were all school board members, superintendents, teachers, and so forth, that we needed to keep in mind that 50% of the state budget goes to schools, 40% of it goes to Medicare, and 10% goes for all other state services. Representative John Patterson is a Republican. He's on the House Education Committee, former teacher up in Ashtabula. He said that it was important to balance accountability with funding, and he expressed a concern for mid-career teachers. From his point of view, we have lots of new teachers and lots of older teachers, but that the people in their mid-career are leaving education and going in different directions, and so he is there's a need, as he said, a need to affirm teachers in the state of Ohio. School funding, he said he was concerned with cuts in areas such as the FFA, home ec, art, life skills, the common schools. Public schools are key to connection, are a key connection in support of democracy. And Senator Scaravone is a Democrat, Senate Minority Leader. He hoped that something on the funding would be addressed. Said it was rather impractical to have a two-year biennium and a five-year forecast. Schools need to be able to make long-term plans, and so he hoped to be able to do something. Wanted to continue to push for more charter school accountability. His goal would be to have the same rules for everybody, all the schools in the state. Wanted to address issues with mandates, including some of the testing requirements. And his last point was that, you know, that the state had $1.7 billion that they used for tax cuts in the state of Ohio, and he would have liked to have seen some of that money come toward education. So clearly their political perspectives were evident in their discussions, but in general, that was I thought it was kind of nice to hear each of them explaining their individual perspectives. When we started looking at specific bills. There's House Bill 212, which is a large, broad bill. I don't know whether it's going to go very far, but it, my perspective and my understanding is it would completely scramble a lot of things, eliminating kindergarten readiness, would create a different set of assessments. I know we were talking about assessments, but it would direct schools to choose either the Massachusetts prior to 2010 or Iowa prior to 2010, and then there would districts after that would be able to pick from a number of different assessments, and in both cases, the State Department of Education would have to norm reference all these things. There was one comment that said that states might have as many as 600 different testing options. Somehow or another, the state would have to come up with a way to make them all the scores come out equal. So there seemed to be some impracticality in that one. So like I said, I don't know that that was going to go very far. There have been hearings currently going on across the state about pay-to-play. Senator Cliff Height of Finley is holding forums and looking at pay-to-play fees and the impact on schools. Whether the fees are too high, whether they prohibit the barrier for participation for the kids is one aspect. I know some of the testimony given has pointed out that if schools lose the funding from this, they may have to look at reducing or cutting back in terms of programs. So, and I think all of us recognize, we've tried to reinstitute the B teams through the YMCA partnership in that direction, that having kids actively engaged and supervised and, is important. And you hear a lot about how people going to work and being successful in our society need to learn soft skills. The teamwork, the cooperation, playing by the rules, ethics, that you treat people fairly and equitably and so forth. A lot of those things show up in choir, in musical performances, in marching band, in sports, and so forth. And so, it would be nice if we could move in the direction of doing more rather than less. But these hearings are going on, and the state may take some action that would prohibit or cap the amount of money that could be collected. House Bill 39 has passed, and this is a bill that permits schools and camps to procure and use a metered dose inhaler or dry powder inhaler used to alleviate asthmatic symptoms, and according with prescribed policies, and are exempt them from licensing requirements and so forth. So, I guess it was a year ago, the EpiPens, a law was passed, asthmatic inhalers is now a possibility for us to look at. And that is it.
Thank you. Mrs. Powers, anything from Safety and Drug Committee?
Well, a great victory. It did not pass.
Oh,
the,
yeah.
Issue 3, and it went down big, 65-35. So, but after saying all that, it's going to come right back again.
Right.
So we've got to be prepared and stay on that and follow it. So we have not had a meeting yet this month for December, or coming up. We'll have our next meeting in December, so I'll know more information, but a victory this month. So, and like I said before, what they don't understand is that We've been using this stuff for a long time. Marinol's been used in medication for a long time. The only thing that hasn't, and they've been doing the Charlotte's Web now for people and the children who have seizures. So Charlotte's Web has been being worked on for a long time in taking that derivative out of there to use for the seizures. So all of that is being done. So the only thing that wasn't legal was the THC aspect of, you know, the mm-hmm. The derivative to get high. So, and then the monopoly of these 10 people going to be able to do, you know, whatever they wanted. And mm-hmm. so that's a good one, but we have to stay on top of it because it's going to turn right around and there's going to be 20 more people trying to mm-hmm. do the same thing. So, mm-hmm. and then so we'll know more next month.
Okay, good. And I guess maybe along the lines of safety, I know before I came, my husband was just saying, you know, with all the things that are happening with the terrorists and stuff, you know, I think it's important that again, when we look at those building notes, every single building reviews how they have been going over their safety plans. And I remember one building that they had, I think it was their first graders, they closed the normal door that they exit out of, and they said the kids just responded very well and found another exit route, and they were not, I mean, they were just, they did it in a very calm, collected manner, you know. So I think it's important that to know that we are staying on top of those safety plans and that we've been working hard on that. So okay, next up, we need a motion to approve the minutes from last month's meeting as well as our special meeting on October 20th. Motion by Mrs. Powers.
Yep.
I'll second that. Any discussion, questions, revisions, comments? Nope. Roll call.
Ms. Powers?
Yes.
Ms. Devine?
Yes.
Mr. Luke?
Yes.
Mr. Smith?
Yes.
Motion carries. Item 8.1, we need a motion to approve the revised resolution for school compensation agreement that was previously approved at our October 15th board meeting.
So moved.
Motion by Mr. Smith. I'll second that. Todd, want
to? Oh, I'm sorry.
Talk about that?
Yeah, really, this isn't really a new agreement. This is really just adding a. There was just an oversight in the original agreement where a parcel was left off that should have been added. All of the financial figures that we've looked at and presented do not change with this agreement. So this is really just a formality in correcting the agreement.
Okay. Any questions, anyone? Nope. Okay. Roll call.
Mr. Smith?
Yes.
Ms. Devine?
Yes.
Mr. Luke?
Yes.
Ms. Powers?
Yes.
All right. Next up, a motion to recommend the approval of the treasure items.
So moved.
Motion by Mrs. Powers. I'll second that.
Really, it's just the usual items, so if there's any questions, it's mostly the same.
Right. I noticed in the appropriations the amount from ODE for auxiliary services.
Mm-hmm.
That's just kind of a typical thing where it's just something.
Yeah, we get, that's for Trinity.
Okay.
And we're kind of the fiscal agent for them. That's
gotcha.
The way the state sets that up. So three
right.
times a year, we get an allocation for Trinity.
Right.
We do receive a 4% administrative fee
okay.
For being the fiscal agent for those. And again, that's in state law the way that is set up.
Okay, great. Right. Roll call.
Ms. Powers.
Yes.
Ms. Devine.
Yes.
Mr. Luke.
Yes.
Mr. Smith.
Yes.
Motion carries. And then we have our superintendent items. So I need a motion to approve the superintendent. Motion by Mr. Smith.
Second.
Second by Mrs. Powers. Ms. Mankins.
Yes, we have, trying to get to that section, we have several volunteers on again. One section I wanted to take you to is the waiver. And I'll provide a little explanation. We have operated for many years, from my understanding, with one OT and two OT aides, so occupational therapists and occupational therapy aides.
Mm-hmm.
the clinical rules for occupational aides are different than the educational rules for occupational therapists. And we are out of compliance on the educational rules. So this year, the waiver that we'll be hopefully approving in a little bit would allow us to operate to finish this year on the current staffing, and then next year we would be making a change to hire two occupational therapists. It's 1-50 in current law for education, and we have 98 students that receive occupational services, just under 100. So we'd be hiring our second therapist next year, and not the aides. The aides would not be coming back.
Okay. So we have one therapist and two aides now, and next year we would have two therapists and no aides.
Correct. Okay. Which would put us into compliance.
Right.
That was my clarification. That the reason we're doing this is so that we are in compliance with state law.
Correct. For education. For some reason, we were operating under the clinical rules, and those don't apply to education.
And the impact on students, I mean, there's no concerns.
It would just be a different face.
Right.
They'll still be receiving the same services, just from different people.
Okay. And let's see, I will point out it is the second reading of a variety of policy updates, most of them the result of legislation and minor wording changes.
We've talked about a couple of them along the way.
Right. Oh, and there's the resolution to purchase the one new handicapped school bus on there.
There's also our payments in lieu for students that we transport to other facilities that it's not feasible to do, so we make a payment to their parents that's allowable through law.
Also under human resources, Charlie Flint, second grade teacher Raymond, and Marcia Roush, cook here at
I have two notes to talk about, both of those retirements. And also, there's a teacher at Navin who submitted a resignation mid-year who just had a baby. It's very difficult struggle to make that decision. So certainly appreciate their years of service and time for our kids. And I think all of them are making a decision with a heavy heart. How's that? So.
I just like to acknowledge Charlie and Marsha, because I've known both of them, and they are amazing
people.
And, and our district is better because of them.
Absolutely.
Well said, Mr. Smith. Any other questions or comments? Okay, roll call.
Mr. Smith?
Yes.
Ms. Powers?
Yes.
Mr. Luke?
Yes.
Ms. Devine?
Yes. Motion carries. And now we are up to comments and questions from board members. Would you like to start, Mr. Smith?
All right. The other day I went to the Community Investment Corporation meeting, and at that received a report from the Young Entrepreneur
Academy program.
Yes. YEA. And this is a collaborative effort with the Chamber of Commerce. They have 20 students in the class. Their target was 15, so they exceeded that. There are students from both our high school and the early college that are participating, but I think also it's important to note that there are students from both North Union and Fairbanks, Tolls, some from Dublin and Hilliard, that are involved in this. So it's a program that has drawn from around the area. And their first meeting's kind of an orientation was held out at Honda. And so, you know, it's nice to see a collaborative effort get underway and be as successful as this, we hope.
They are using the early college high school as as kind of their base point.
Right. The war rally at Raymond was amazing. I got to the sixth fourth grade route, the late the afternoon route, and that was amazing. The other thing, as I came into this building, and I know in the other buildings around the district, students are doing a lot of food donations for the local food pantry, and we'll be working hard to make sure that everybody enjoys a nice Thanksgiving and that, you know, they give back to the community for the support that the community provides them for their schools. And it's, I think, really, they do absolutely amazing things. And there's a ton of food out there.
There is.
They'll do anything for crazy hair day, I'm just saying.
Or
pajama day.
I was able to do the Saturday morning coffee with Dick at Tim Hortons, and then next month I will do it with possibly Sue, and I will probably take the notes and do the follow-up. Dick took the notes and he did follow-up. I found it very useful, so I hope we keep doing that.
Sounds great.
I was able to go to the Capitol Conference as well and went to a couple of sessions that were interesting and useful. One of them was on drug safety and focused exclusively on heroin. Mm-hmm. Now, heroin, I learned one thing that was shocking to me. Maybe you guys all know this already. Heroin is killing more young people than automobile accidents now. I'd never heard that before, and I was quite shocked by that. So, you know, it was a meeting about what can be done with this problem. I'm also sitting on a committee. There's a group called the OSBA, Ohio School Boards Association, which is an affiliation of school boards. Most of the Ohio school boards are in it, and they provide support service for school boards and also do a lot of lobbying and advocacy for public education. So I think it's a good group. So I'll be on a committee called the Central Region Executive Committee. A very boring title. I'll let you know if the meetings are equally boring. But I'll see. I believe in the OSBA, so I want to get involved a little bit more. I think it's a year or two. I don't actually know how long the plan is.
You might have signed your life away, Brian. You don't even know it.
There's a little update. And I was able to get to Steel Magnolias with Sue.
Yes.
And really appreciated what the high school students did dramatically with that.
Yeah.
It's impressive.
It was very impressive.
Thank you for a wonderful time tonight. The kids were awesome. The presentation was great. And I just want to say I'm thankful and excited to be back for another 4 years. So looking forward to working with everyone and continuing to go forward into all these new adventures and all the excitement ahead.
Todd?
I have nothing to add.
I just also had on my notes I wanted to congratulate both Sue and Amy for their reelection. I think that your focus on community and providing great opportunities for kids and has just been remarkable in my time here. So thank you for that. And certainly I think your margin of victory spoke volumes for the work we're doing in the district. And it was another kind of check mark of approval and keep up the good work on behalf of the school district. So congratulations.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Well, with that, I would also like to thank Lynette, Heather, all of those, the people who presented, the students, thank them for us. It was great to see them so excited. I think we all want to come and visit those classrooms too. Also, with Thanksgiving approaching, wanted to take the time to thank those that I work with. It's a pleasure to work with people who are so committed to helping our students. I appreciate our community that is committed to working with us and being supportive of everything that's going on here. And finally, thank our students, because that's what we're all here for. And appreciate the way that they represent us. Like you said, going to Steel Magnolias, mm-hmm. I mean, so impressive. And then at the chamber meetings, they frequently will talk about being at events where some students are doing some presentations, and they're always so so complimentary of how impressive they are and how well they represent our district. So happy Thanksgiving to everybody. And with that, how about a motion to adjourn?
So moved. Oh. Dick's got it. I'll second.
Okay. Motion by Mr. Smith, second by Mrs. Powers. Roll call.
Mr. Smith?
Yes.
Ms. Powers?
Yes.
Mr. Luke?
Yes.
Ms. Devine?
Yes. And the meeting is adjourned at 9:20.